Hello and welcome to the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on ArrowheadAddict.com and Blog Talk Radio. My name is Joshua Briscoe, and on today's show, I'm going to be taking a few clips from my time on Sports Radio 810 this week on Sports Sunday. I had a really good conversation with Seth Kaiser of Arrowhead Pride, talking about what he's seen in his Dontari Poe film review and what he thinks about Eric Berry, Alex Smith, and much, much more. A ton packed into that interview. But first and foremost, I talk about Colin Kaepernick as a potential option at quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs. Before you turn off in disgust, trust me that I make an actual argument. By the end, maybe your opinion will be swayed. First, I want to say thank you, though, to all the Patreon supporters of this show, the $20 supporters, Randy Singh at Randy underscore Singh underscore, Ray Hines at Big Turf Guy, Derek Vaughn at D underscore Vaughn 88, and Andy Simpson, $10 group, Christine Roadlander at C Roadlander, and then Josh Beadle and Tide Declare in the $5 group. Now, let's get into the show.
This is Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810, WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Joshua Briscoe, Charlie Carlin, spinning the records on the other side of the glass. I said when we went to break, we were going to come back and I was going to tell you a quarterback option for the Chiefs that you are going to hate. And we're still going to do that. I'm going to start with something about Tony Romo, but the answer is not Tony Romo. The option you're going to hate is not Tony Romo. Don't worry about it. But a quick update, though. Jason LaCanfora said that Tony Romo's interested in going to Houston, Denver, Arizona, or Kansas City. Not necessarily those are the four options that are actually on the table, but those are four that Romo is interested in. LaCanfora also said he thinks the Cowboys are more likely to trade Romo rather than to release him. Earlier this week, the report was that he was going to get cut. So we don't know what's going on with Tony Romo. I'm giving you another option. First of all, every available option. Charlie is shrieking right now. Oh, we're not there yet. You gotta wait.
I'm just really, really curious to who you're about to say.
We're building
right
it up. First, pick every available option, including the guy I'm going to give you in a minute. You have to draft a quarterback because you have to address the short term and the long term. Who gives the Chiefs the best chance to win in 2017? Who gives them the best chance to win in 2020? You're not allowed to sell out to plan 3 years in advance in the NFL. Your fan base won't allow it. Especially when you might get that wrong. Like in 2012, the Colts took Andrew Luck. He was good right away, and he was expected to be. That was the short-term and the long-term best answer. Washington traded up for Robert Griffin. He seemed like the best short-term and long-term answer. That one failed, though. Washington got very lucky when they got Kirk Cousins later in the draft. The Chiefs have to address the short-term and the long-term. If Tony Romo stays healthy, he's definitely the best short-term option. But with the AFC West, which is filled with Von Miller and Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa each twice a year, Tony Romo's health is far from determined. So if you're not on the Tony Romo train, totally cool. Fine with me. One more time, the Chiefs have to draft their future quarterback. It's time. It's the right move. Like I talked about last week, you have to either get an elite guy or get value. Ideally, you get both. But elite play cannot be guaranteed. But value just about can be. You can't guarantee your first-round quarterback is going to be Aaron Rodgers, but you can guarantee what he's going to make and then build the rest of your team around that pretty low number for your quarterback. And Romo would not be a value. He'd have a chance at bringing elite play. But again, I think he'd have a much harder time staying healthy in the AFC West than he would, say, in the AFC South. So the Chiefs have to draft a quarterback, ideally in the first round. But I saw a tweet this week that made me consider another potential option in addition to drafting a guy. Ready? Drum roll. Brrr. Colin Kaepernick. I think Charlie just cursed on the other side of the glass. He looks very dejected. Hear me out. 913-3810-18. Hear me out. First of all, the guy who pointed this out was Cian Fahey on Twitter, at C-I-A-N-A-F. Go tweet him your angry things. He has a very unique perspective on football. He watches every snap of every quarterback, if not literally, then just about. I trust his eyes more than I trust my own as far as judging quarterbacks. And he said that Colin Kaepernick had a good year last year among a horrendous situation. We just didn't notice. He's on a terrible, terrible team. For example, could you name two weapons for the San Francisco 49ers last year? Because I couldn't. I play fantasy football. I couldn't think of a single wide receiver. Carlos Hyde had almost 1,000 yards rushing last year, but he only was healthy for 13 games. Then the Niners were running Sean Drone after that, the former Chief. Kaepernick had almost 500 rushing yards in 12 games, by the way. But do you know who led the Niners in yards and receptions? Jeremy Curley. Did you know Jeremy Curley was still in the league? I thought he retired after the Jets were done with him. Honestly. I didn't know he was still in the league. Second, Quentin Patton. If I said right now, is Quentin Patton the second leading receiver for the San Francisco 49ers, or is he a Civil War general? I would have put every penny on him being a Civil War general. So that's some of the logic. We've got more. Because we've seen Colin Kaepernick be really good. And I think he seems like a nice fit in Andy Reid's system. But he's more aggressive than Alex Smith is. Which is exactly what Andy Reid desperately, desperately needs. But most importantly, value, value, value. This isn't about paying him Alex Smith's salary and then hoping he's better than Alex Smith. This is about paying him $10 million less than Alex Smith and getting Alex Smith production, plus aggressiveness, greater athleticism, more fun to cover if you're doing a radio show. But really, you're paying him probably $8 to $10 million less than Alex Smith, who I think is a $17 million cap hit this year. The Chiefs would save about $10 million cutting him this year. They're still going to owe him like the 7.2 or so. So this year, the Chiefs are in a little bit of a tight spot either way. Kaepernick comes in and saves you a few million dollars. It's a few million bucks that you can use to keep Eric Berry around. Or to invest in Dontari Poe or Dontari Poe's replacement. And Colin Kaepernick can do Alex Smith things. Some things better. The Niners are going to cut Kaepernick this offseason because it's going to save him $17 million in cap space because they gave him a super front-loaded contract. Kaepernick needs a good situation. Andy Reid could use him perfectly, and he would push back on Andy Reid, which is something that Alex Smith has not done his entire time in Kansas City. You cut Alex Smith, you save $9.7 million. Every dollar that you get Colin Kaepernick for below that is money in the Chiefs' pocket to keep Eric Berry, to keep or replace Dontari Poe, to bring in another weapon. And at that point, the question becomes, would you rather have Kaepernick's first year with Andy Reid or Alex Smith's fourth? Also, Colin Kaepernick coming in this year would, on a good contract, have a chance to be a really, really good move for the Chiefs in the future. Even as a backup to, like, Pat Mahomes next year, which is the ideal situation, right? Even as a backup to Pat Mahomes, you'd be investing something like $10 million into your entire quarterback position in 2018. That number is based off of, I think, what Jared Goff made this year or what Derek Carr was making his rookie season, numbers like that. You invest something like $10 million in your entire quarterback position in 2018, with Colin Kaepernick either as the guy going blow for blow with the rookie, fighting to be the best guy, or as a very competent backup. When you're investing $10 million in your quarterback position, the rest of your team starts to look really good. Because you can pay those defensive playmakers. You can bring in Jeremy Maclin. You can afford to extend a guy like Travis Kelce. And that's where the Chiefs are at right now. But even in this season, they could bring him in for a lower number than Alex Smith is going to cost. And I am not saying that this is the absolute ideal, best, and only move the Chiefs must make this year. I'm saying we should discuss it. Because I don't think we can keep accepting the status quo that the Chiefs have right now. I think we've been stuck in that for too long. Even if the Chiefs do take a quarterback at 27, which I think they should do, please hear me say that. Even if they take that quarterback, even if they take Pat Mahomes at 27, 2017 is going to be Alex Smith's season. And Smith is just a neutral presence. He's just a neutral quarterback. He's good enough to help a good team win a lot of regular season games. He's not great enough to elevate a good team over a great quarterback. It's why this team's going to lose to Tom Brady and Ben Roethlisberger every year. And the two ways you can get around that problem are to have an elite quarterback or to be paying your quarterback a meager enough amount of money to where the rest of your team is at a different level. Also, Brad Childress will now serve as the Chiefs' assistant head coach, and Matt Nagy will be the team's only offensive coordinator. This is the thing that truly changes everything. Before we go to the phones, Charlie, you just had a long conversation with someone else who called in. What was that about?
Yeah, he was just saying, why bring Colin Kaepernick in? He's just such a cancer. He's just a cancer of the organization. You saw what he did last year and all the controversy and all of that.
Was that
I know he was just trying to make a stance and, like, stand up for something, which is great. Like,
all right, that's enough. Thank you, Charlie, for representing him fairly. By the way, if you have that stand, you can talk to me. We can have that conversation if you want. I like conversations when I disagree with someone. You know when that stops seeming like a cancer? When the team's winning. If Colin Kaepernick came here, and this is so many ifs and ands or maybes, I understand. But if Colin Kaepernick rolls up and the Chiefs are all of a sudden like in the AFC Championship game, you will give the American flag the moon. You will moon the national anthem. 913-3810-810 if you want to call in and talk about it. Let's go to JT. JT, good morning.
Hey, man. I realize you're on your social justice warrior kick here, but I just have to ask, why do you think, you know, is this a white privilege thing? Do you just hate Clark Hunt? What are you trying to do here, man?
I'm trying to help the Chiefs get better value at quarterback.
Okay. So you believe that Kaepernick would change from his attitude of me first to team guy if he came here?
I mean, if you think that's a problem that he currently has, then I would think that you would trust Andy Reid to be the type of guy that could do that. He brought in a domestic abuser who's been pretty solid for them. If you're going to say that Colin Kaepernick is a problem, if that's the angle you take on it, Andy Reid's shown himself to be pretty comfortable taking on problems. He took on Michael Vick.
Yeah, well, here's my thing. I think Colin Kaepernick has gone Michael Sam route, okay? I think he's made the issue and himself as the face of the issue more important than his football team and winning. And I don't think Andy Reid is going to bring that on, to his team. Other thing you should know is Colin Kaepernick, as a lifetime NFL quarterback, is a loser, okay? He's a 28-30 record as a starter. So he is not somebody that I think makes your team better from a team standpoint. I agree with you, he has better physical skills, but I just don't think that all the other issues that would come into play would contribute to the team the way that Andy Reid wants to do it. So I think it's a complete non-starter for that reason. But
I think that's something that Andy Reid would have to evaluate from his own spot. And if he goes and if he evaluates it and says, he's going to shake up this team in a way that I can't do it, that's fine. But Andy Reid has never shied away from a guy like that if he thinks it brings, especially at the quarterback position, especially if he thinks it's going to bring in any sort of value to make the team better.
Well, here's the thing. The first thing those guys have to do, though, for Andy Reid to look at him is be a team guy, okay? Because Tyreek Hill may have gotten in trouble for what he did off the field, but on the field he's a team guy, okay? Donovan McNabb may have been, a bit of a...
Terrell Owens was pretty good with Philly.
He was, yeah, okay. Okay, you have a good point with Terrell Owens. Terrell Owens was not the quarterback. The quarterback is completely different than everything else. Remember the Lombardi quote before you start examining quarterback. No analysis that applies to a wide receiver ever comes close to applying to a quarterback. So I just don't think Colin Kaepernick is a starter.
JT, I appreciate it. I know we disagree. I figured to get several people that would disagree, and that's cool. I do appreciate the call and other perspective. It's definitely something that they would have to consider as an organization. But I'm saying, I think pretty clearly, if Andy Reid can look at that guy and say, this is going to help us win and get further into the playoffs than we're currently getting with Alex Smith. Alex Smith, who, again, not only a neutral presence on the field, he seems to be a pretty neutral dude, like, in the locker room. Like, he's a solid, like, leader by default at the quarterback position, but he's not the Eric Berry type of guy who just seems like he's probably trying to take a hold of every room he walks into just naturally. I think we see different types of guys at the quarterback position all the time. If you want Tom Brady, no one's going to argue that. That's ideal. Has Ben Roethlisberger always been the perfect team guy? He's had his off-the-field trouble. Cam Newton was in the Super Bowl and then didn't take questions afterwards. A lot of you got mad at him for that. Was that not being quarterbacky enough? He was in the Super Bowl. I don't know that Colin Kaepernick is the right quarterback for this exact situation, but to act like we should disqualify him from the conversation because he was the subject of a huge story this last season, I think is silly. And he certainly became the face of it, but he also didn't start it. I think this is something, if we're going to go this route, and I wasn't really trying to run in this direction today, but I figured we'd probably get here at least a little bit. Colin Kaepernick didn't, like, slide a note into the press box and said, hey guys, look over at the sideline during this game today. You're going to see me not standing up, and I'm going to be a sweet story. He was sitting during the national anthem the first two times, had the conversation with, I think it was military members, if I remember correctly, decided to start doing the knee thing because he was told it was a more respectful way to go about his protest and all that. Did that ever come off as a really look at me start to the whole thing? I think he became the face of it, certainly. Also, whenever the Niners stopped being good and the rest of the NFL started being more interesting, I didn't hear about Colin Kaepernick the second half of the season at all. Because everybody, like, there was a few guys who were putting the fists up during the national anthem, and the handful of guys that started taking the knee, and then, you know, the Chiefs all linked arms the one time, and Marcus Peters put his fist up, and I think that storyline sizzled out, as all stories do in our current media cycle. Now, if he came here, of course that story would be brought up again in Kansas City. But if he's winning, I'm telling you, winning is, especially in Kansas City, where we care so much about the football team, and we're so starved for postseason victories. If Colin Kaepernick came here at half of Alex Smith's salary and was doing what Alex Smith did, even, I think we would start to give him every benefit of the doubt. All of the measurement gets redone based off of the performance. This stuff always happens. Tyreek Hill is a Rookie of the Year candidate. He is psychotic on the field. He's doing things we've never seen before. He's putting Dante Hall behind him in his rookie season. So he's a team player who's doing everything he needs to be doing off the field, who's really gotten his emotions together. He's all of those things. If Tyreek Hill was fumbling kickoffs all the time, he'd be the domestic abuser who the Chiefs shouldn't have drafted and shouldn't have trusted. And performance determines how we talk about people more than anything else does, for better or for worse. If you think that's right or wrong, eventually it gets to that point. Colin Kaepernick was on a terrible team last year, and he had one of his down seasons, and probably his worst season. So it's very easy to criticize him, especially when he was doing it as a backup. People would say, hey, what are you, you're gonna make yourself the center of attention as a backup? You're not even good enough to start for the 49ers. Why should you be good enough to talk about a social cause? If he came here and was a good quarterback for the Chiefs, we would give him the Tyreek Hill treatment.
So are you saying that Colin Kaepernick as a backup is more valuable than Nick Foles as a backup?
He has a higher ceiling for sure. But I'm saying in this situation, it almost certainly means the releasing of Alex Smith. Because you're paying Colin Kaepernick less money than what you save from cutting Alex Smith. That's a net positive in the salary cap. If you're trying to make any sort of cap moves and increase the ceiling on your football team, I would say if the Chiefs are just going to back up Alex Smith and just trot Alex Smith back out there again this year, then just draft Pat Mahomes and you give Alex Smith another year and the Chiefs lose in the divisional round and that's the end of the season and then you hope Pat Mahomes is good next year.
Well, yeah, I mean, I honestly don't have much faith in the 2017 Chiefs. I think they're going to go with Alex Smith, and yep. I think we're going to get an 8-8 record because did you see that schedule?
Yeah, the whole AFC West has a tough schedule.
I know,
I think the four
right,
toughest schedules
right,
are the AFC
still.
West because the AFC West is good, and they have to play each other twice. But
you're right.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a challenging schedule for all of those teams. If Derek Carr stays healthy a whole season, as he almost did this year, the Raiders are the best team in the division. The Chiefs can fight that. The Broncos go get Tony Romo. All of a sudden, we're saying, well, if Romo stays healthy, the Chiefs are the third best team. And the Chargers are going to know the Chargers are still bad. But yeah, that's absolutely how this works. And at this point, if you just gave me a or B pick an option thing between you want Alex Smith year four or Kaepernick Reed year one, in both cases, drafting a quarterback in the first round.
Yes, absolutely.
Neither of those choices mean not drafting a quarterback in the first or maybe second round.
Have to make that clear.
Ideally, drafting up to get the guy you want in the first round, if need be, then I think that's a real conversation that you have to have because you're not saying, do you want Alex Smith at $17 million or Colin Kaepernick at $17 million? You're saying, do you want to give Alex Smith his $7 million to go away, bring in Colin Kaepernick for maybe $6 million, and then spend that money to keep Eric Berry, who everyone loves?
It's only $1 million. That's a lot of risk.
No, you'd be saving about $10 million for Alex Smith, cutting him. You give Smith
right,
about
yeah.
$7 million and you save about $10 million. Then you bring in Kaepernick for, say, $6, $4 million. What are you risking, though? I think this is something that we sort of overestimate. What are you risking? You're risking your low ceiling? I mean, definitely the worst Colin Kaepernick season would be worse than the worst Alex Smith season. But the best Colin Kaepernick season compared to the best Alex Smith season next year is not even close.
I think you're putting the ceiling for Colin Kaepernick a little too high. I mean, Alex Smith, He led us obviously to a 12-4 record. And
no, he was a participant in a 12-4 record.
Okay, fair. But Kaepernick started 11 games and was 1-10. I know he was around a terrible team,
very bad team,
but
the worst team I've ever seen.
I would
offensively.
I have much more faith in Alex Smith than I do Colin Kaepernick.
You have more faith in Alex Smith being able to get you to 10 or 12 wins and then losing the divisional round.
Yeah. Well, that's just the Chiefs. That's just how they've been forever.
But that's how the Chiefs have been forever because that's how the quarterback position's been forever. The Chiefs
right.
have been in love with mediocre quarterbacks,
and
neutral quarterbacks.
But you think Colin Kaepernick could fix that?
No, I think he could be an option to break that mold this year. Where he could be, he's a dynamic option to where he could rise above that neutral level. There's a small, and if he is above that neutral level, even if he is just Alex Smith, he's doing it more cheaply. Especially next season. Again, we're talking about having a Kaepernick-Mahomes battle for your 2018 day one starter. You're spending $15 to $20 million more in other places than most NFL teams. Most NFL teams are spending $20, $25, $30 million in that quarterback spot. With a guy like Kaepernick on a $6 million deal and Mahomes on a rookie contract, all of a sudden you have insane flexibility elsewhere.
So in every situation, you're saying cut Nick Foles. What is your opinion on Nick Foles?
I think his actual cap number just came out at $7.5 million. I think that just because it was reported that it was like a $10 million option, and it's an option not cutting him, so I think they could let him go totally
clean. I have it right here. It's a almost $11 million cap hit.
That was the report earlier, though, but it came out like the NFLPA just changed their books like a week ago, And I think
Scoring
it had him.
Track, so.
I think it had him down to $7.5 million. You might have to do some snooping for that. I'm not really sure. But no, I don't think that Nick Foles is worth that $7.5 million number, because what he's doing in a best case scenario is what he did last year. He comes in and he saves a game where Alex Smith gets hurt. He wins a game against the Jags without Alex Smith, and you're the same team. Now those games, hell, if you had to put in Tyler Bray against the Jags, then maybe the Chiefs don't win the AFC West or get that first round bye. In which case, they still don't win any playoff games. So that's an option. Okay? It's not the truth. It's not the only choice. But in addition to drafting your next guy at a good value, I think Colin Kaepernick is something you should consider. 913-3810-810 is the phone number if you want to call in. We'll squeeze in before the end of the hour. Coming up next, we're going to have an interview with Seth Keezer of Arrowhead Pride, who is fantastic. We're going to talk about a bunch of other Chiefs-related things, like the future of Dontari Poe and Eric Berry. If you're mad about the quarterback position thing, I do want to know what else you want to do. What I'm trying to do with Kaepernick right now is present to you an option. An option that you probably haven't considered yet. You might have more faith in a guy like Tyrod Taylor, but he's going to come in at the same price as Alex Smith. Tony Romo is going to be more than what Alex Smith's cap hit would be, but you still probably can't afford to keep both of those guys on the roster at the same time, even though having Alex Smith behind Tony Romo would be great. We all want to draft a quarterback. Do you want to start him day one? Charlie, before the end of the hour, you're smiling again. I hate it when people call in and then just talk to Charlie, and then Charlie hangs up and is like smirking. What was that angry call? I know it was anger, talking about Colin Kaepernick.
He just wanted to know who you were, and so he could find you because he wanted to beat you up for saying Colin Kaepernick should be.
Did he beat me up? Was it a physical?
He didn't actually say that. He just wanted to know your name and why you think Kaepernick would be a good option.
I think it's just an option. And I gave my reasoning for that previously. If you missed any of it, I will tweet it out on my Twitter account, at JB Briscoe. You can follow me and tweet hateful, mean things. My name is Joshua Briscoe, by the way. You can follow me on Twitter, at JB Briscoe, as I said. I'll tweet out the podcasts. I'm a little bit disappointed that this is such a contentious thing, because I think we need to consider it just as a place the Chiefs can go. But because of all of the quote-unquote other Colin Kaepernick stuff, I knew we weren't going to really be able to have a football-only conversation. I'm not totally delusional, although several of you would probably disagree with that after this segment. If you're interested in more Chiefs stuff, as I said, coming up next, have a really good conversation about Dontari Poe, Eric Berry. I'll mention my Colin Kaepernick idea to Seth, but it'll mostly be him telling you that the Chiefs should keep Eric Berry, I'm sure. And you guys will all feel better about the future of the Chiefs in a world where very little changes. I'm sorry you're all mad. I'm just trying to help. This is Sports Sunday.
This is Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Don't let me down. Don't let me
down. Welcome back to Sports Sunday here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Now joining the show on the phone, Seth Keezer of ArrowheadPride.com, at RealMNChiefsFan on Twitter. Seth has probably watched more Chiefs tape than just about anybody I could find on Twitter, and definitely more than any human being should have to put himself through. Seth, thanks for joining the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Josh. I appreciate it.
I want to start off with something that you've been kind of teasing for a little while on Twitter now, and I think maybe one of the most interesting topics of this Chiefs offseason outside of the quarterback position, and you've been talking about doing this Dontari Poe film review. Now, I know you're just a couple of games into your review, but you've obviously watched him through the season as a regular fan and then also as a film breaker down. Breaker downer?
Breaker downer. Yeah, I think that works.
And then now a little bit extra in-depth. How far into it now, or considering how far into it you are now, give me kind of your big picture view on Don Tarrypo and what he is as a player, and then maybe what the Chiefs should do from here.
Sure. Well, what I'll say about Poe is he's been an interesting case study in fan narratives. Up until this year, the narrative about from fans, by and large, was that Don Tarrypo was a dominant nose tackle.
Right.
Well, now that it's his contract year, and he did have, as far as I could tell, a bit of a regressive year. He struggled with that back injury a little bit. Now the narrative is he's terrible.
Right.
And it's always interesting. It's always one or the other. What I've seen from Poe, like you said, I'm a couple games in, and you just never know what more games will hold. But what I've seen from Poe so far is not as much consistency as he's had in previous years. He definitely is still, you know, big, strong guy, can hold up at the point of the attack quite a bit, and is just crazy athletic for his size. But those things seem to come in flashes, especially in the pass rush department. I think his pass rushing it took a bit of a step back this season. He didn't have as many impactful plays, where it used to be he was good for at least two or three plays a game where he'd just kind of, you know, club the left guard aside and then just sprint at a terrified quarterback, right?
Right.
We just didn't see as much of that this year, and he isn't having – when I watch a defensive lineman, I chart wins, losses, and neutral plays, right? So regardless of what else happens around them. I'm not seeing as many pass rush wins as I did in years past. He's not bad at it. He's okay at it. And I would say the same thing with regards to his run defense from what I'm seeing. He can hold up decently at the point of attack. He's not as good at taking on double teams as I'd really like. But he doesn't play nose tackle even half the time he's out there. So I think they're okay with him being okay at it. He eats more double teams than any other defensive lineman we have, though, and it's not even close. So what I found is Poe is unique in that I think he's the only lineman the Chiefs have who can consistently eat double teams and hold firm at the point of attack. And so from a big picture standpoint, if they let him walk, I have real serious questions over whether anyone else on the roster can do what he does. Fans float, you know, Nunez Roches or Chris Jones, and the problem is that they're just big bodies. They don't do the same thing, right? They're gap splitters, not guys that can hold up at the point of attack. Jay Howard's the closest thing they have, and he gets washed out by double teams most of the time. So I would say big picture with Poe is he's an okay pass rusher for a tackle, and he's okay against the run. And that combination is somewhat rare. You know, you usually have guys that can rush the passer but are bad against the run, or vice versa.
Right.
And the fact that he can do both, it enhances his value because he can be out there on all three downs. He can be out there on, you know, third and one, and he can be out there on third and 15. And it doesn't hurt you. But he it's kind of the truth kind of lies in between where the two narratives have gone. I used to say, you know, Don Tarrypo is a little overrated by the fan base. And I would just get crucified on Twitter for that and in comment sections. Now I've kind of become like one of his staunch defenders. Like, well, no, he's still a good player. And the truth is, as it usually is, somewhere in between. I would say it's going to hurt the Chiefs' defense if they let him walk. Unless they bring back Reyes and he shows something like to that effect, because he's got the size. But there's just no one else that can do what Poe does, at least well, that they've seen. They tried Nunez Roches at nose tackle a little bit when they rotated him in, and it was a disaster. He just got thrown aside. Bailey is too light. Chris Jones is way too tall. I just don't see it. And so I think he's a fairly important cog for them to keep in place. Although, the question everyone wants to know, much less important than Eric Bailey.
And, you know, figuring out that you're definitely trying to take care of Eric Berry first, and we'll hop over to him in just a second. What is the value of a guy who's, you know, good against the run, good against the pass, good at eating up those double teams, but not necessarily great at anything, across the board good, versatile good? Is that is that worth the kind of money that he's probably going to demand when, you know, up against free agency here? What is your plan of attack? Are you franchise tagging him and trying to see if there's a chance of another year of regression? How do you handle the D'Antaripo situation now from a GM perspective?
You know, it's tough because you've got certain contracts out there, like the contract that Brocker's got with the Rams, mm-hmm. that puts the market in a completely absurd position.
Right.
Because you get an agent really, well, Brocker's got this. And it's like, yeah, but that was a stupid contract. And how mm-hmm. do you argue with that, mm-hmm. right, as a GM? And the problem is the market always, always, always overvalues decent players. That's why you know, every year someone signs the highest contract for a safety ever, or right. highest contract for a corner ever. It's just how it goes. And so what I would do in post case, though, because of the unique circumstances here, because there's some concerns about his back, because he didn't have a lot of sacks, and that's what it catches a lot of people's attention, I would let him hit the market. Because I don't think, and all it takes is one team, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he's going to get a godfather offer. Yeah. You know, Jay Howard was better in 2015 than Poe was in 2016, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think he made a lot more splash plays. And, you know, we were all worried, oh, man, how are we going to hang on to Howard? He's going to break the bank. What are we going to do? And then they brought him back for, like $5 million per.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he got hurt, and that was unfortunate. And I think what ends up happening is, like anything else, we tend to overvalue the guys that we see a lot of. And I think Poe was kind of overrated by Chiefs fans long enough. And, again, he's a good player. I don't mean to insult him by calling him overrated. I just don't think he's dominant the way a lot of people thought he was. I think people thought that for so long, they're assuming he's going to break the bank. But I don't think he's that well-known a name outside of, like, you know, scoring touchdowns,
right.
which is awesome, but sure. it's not going to get him a bigger contract. So I would let him hit the open market. And, everyone's like, well, how many millions dollars a year would you pay? I mean, given where the Chiefs defense currently sits and seeing how they've done developing defensive linemen, I wouldn't really go above $8 or $9 million a year with him. And I would be really cautious about the length of the contract, too, because, you know, what the expression is, you never had back problems.
Right.
You know, I hurt my back working out in the oil patch a decade ago. My back is still messed up sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, those never go away, especially when you weigh 340 pounds. So I wouldn't go any farther than $8 or $9 million a year, and I would think long and hard about that amount.
And if you're going to be out here...
I wouldn't tag him either, by the way. That's like $13 million or something like that.
Yeah, it's huge. I think it's 13 for the one season, yeah.
Oof.
And if you're divvying out the money across this defense, it already obviously has some big money players. Let's go to Eric Berry really quickly. You are willing to make Eric Berry, you said, you know, always that new contract that makes someone the highest paid safety in NFL history. Well, we're going to see that this offseason with Eric Berry.
Oh, yeah.
You want the Chiefs to be the team to give him that deal?
I do. You know, you never know. I mean, if his agent's asking for, like, you know, Justin Houston money, well, then, yeah, you let him walk. Because the positional importance is a big deal.
Right.
But he's one of the best two or three safeties in the league. And he's up for a new contract. And that's how this always works. You know, because the cap's going to go up another $10 million this year. That's just how this goes. And then there's the other side of it, you know. I feel like we've come so far in the age of analytics that we've gone from overvaluing things like locker room presence, leadership, that kind of stuff. I think that used to be a little overrated, and now it's almost a little underrated. You know, we get into this point where there's other leaders on the team. I really, you know, you read stories about Berry, I think he is the guy in that locker room. I think he is the leader, and I think Justin Houston's in there too, and I think Alex Smith as the quarterback is by default. But you can see in games when Berry is bringing it, the whole defense follows him. And he just is that valuable. He's brilliant against the run. Everyone knows that. He's become very, very capable against the pass, although you still have a lot of holdouts that think he's not. I'm here to be the one to tell you, if you think Eric Berry is still bad in coverage, you're just wrong. And I don't know what else to say. It's just, you're talking several years of evidence to the contrary. He can play anywhere on the field, so he can take care of any weaknesses you might have someplace else. If you're going up against a team like, say, Carolina that runs the ball well, you can keep him up the line of scrimmage. You're playing against a team that loves to sling the ball and doesn't run it that well, well, you have him play back. You have him play deep. He can set the tone physically, and he can ball hawk. And the Chiefs probably lose at least two more games if he's not out there this year. And that is incredibly rare to say about any other player but a quarterback. And so you have to pay him. He's just that important.
Now, you mentioned the word quarterback, so let's get weird. You've watched an unbelievable amount of Alex Smith. You've watched Alex Smith on repeat. I'm assuming you've watched him in reverse while laying in bed on the couch.
Slow motion.
Yes.
Yeah, with strobe lights. It's been weird.
I know that you have seen enough of Alex Smith to know what Alex Smith is from kind of a zoomed out perspective, but I feel like most of us have a pretty good idea of what Alex Smith is. Is there one misconception about him that you want to like correct across all of Chiefs Kingdom, or do we pretty much have it right that Alex Smith is exactly the guy that we've seen?
I think, you know, for the most part, other than the extremists on both sides, it's a lot like politics, right?
Right.
Other than the extremists on each side, most people seem to have a pretty good idea. If there was a misconception about Alex, I think people, how about we'll do one where he's overrated, one where he's underrated. I think he tends to get overrated with his ability to avoid turnovers at this point, at least in 2016, because he actually was being a little riskier with the ball. He actually was pushing it a little bit more, not as much as I would have liked. But he wasn't quite as safe as he'd been in years past. I think that's become almost an overrated part of his game, this idea that he just never, ever, ever throws potential picks. He does sometimes at this point.
But does he do it enough?
And then I would say, huh?
But does he do that enough, though? Do you still sit there and claw at your eyes whenever you watch a replay and see Jeremy Maclin streaking down the field wide open?
I do. Okay. And, you know, it's tough because when I don't know the play call. I don't know the order in which he's supposed to go through the reads. And anyone that thinks that they know, at least from a, you know, analyst perspective or whatever, that claims to know exactly what was supposed to happen on a play, they're lying because they just don't. They weren't in the huddle. And so you never know. Maybe because there are some plays, and this is where I end up being the guy that's defending him, when he, you know, his first read is open 10 yards down the field, he completes the pass, but Tyreek Hill was streaking open on the opposite side of the field. And everyone says, oh, that's a missed shot. Well, his first read was open. So he threw to the first read.
Right.
That's the nature of playing quarterback. You don't want your quarterback passing up open reads just in case someone else is open. That's insane. And that's a great way to lose football games. You know, that said, he does miss shots. He missed too many of them against Pittsburgh. And I think everyone knows about those. And they are frustrating. These weren't ones where there was a good excuse. They were just ones where he got happy feet and panicked. You know, tried to make a play with his feet. He. I don't think he'll ever be a quarterback who will trust his blocking enough. And maybe that's, you know, a little mini David Carr syndrome kind of thing. But that's just, it is what it is. He pulls the ball down too much. I do think one thing people underrate about him is his ability to read coverages and to know where to go with the ball pre-snap. He seems pretty good about that. People complain that he doesn't seem to go through enough reads.
Mm-hmm.
He's a pre-snap read guy.
Right.
He generally knows where the ball is going before he throws, and that couldn't be a bad thing, but it also speaks very highly to his ability to know what the defense is doing. And I think that's one reason Andy Reid likes him.
Now, let's get practical with Alex Smith then. We can agree, you know, he's underrated in some aspects, he's overhated in many, but if I make you say, all right, here's what the future of the Chiefs looks like at the quarterback position, what do you do from here? As of February 2017, what does the ideal future look like if you're calling the shots?
If I'm calling the shots, and I said this in the very last film review I wrote about Alex, the Pittsburgh film review, the problem with Alex is that this year he had pretty good pass protection. Not great. You know, we saw what great pass protection looked like when we played Pittsburgh, right?
Yeah.
That's great pass pro. Smith never had that, but he had okay pass pro this year, and he had a few weapons that most quarterbacks would give almost anything for. I think you can stack up Tyreek Hill, Jeremy Maclin, and Travis Kelce, and even throw in Chris Conley, who was pretty productive from a yards per target standpoint. I think you can stack up that four group of targets against a lot of weapons in the league, and they look good. And we just didn't see him take a step forward, and many would argue that he regressed. And so the problem is we've hit a ceiling here.
Yep.
It certainly seems like it.
Yeah.
And so for me, you know, Alex Smith, the problem is he's just good enough to make it tough to move on from him.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not quite good enough to make you confident moving forward. And so if I were the Chiefs, what I would do is I would take a good long look at the three or four quarterbacks that are considered maybe first-round, second-round guys. And if they like one of them, I go with that. You know, go with the one that falls to you. Or if you like him enough, trade up a little bit. Because I think we've seen the ceiling of what Alex Smith can accomplish. I personally, because of the presence of Andy Reid and how, I mean, he's maligned about a few things, but he's generally an incredible offensive coach. Considering the way he runs his offense, I've actually been someone, and this got me laughed at here before, so it'd be kind.
Oh, no.
I've always been, look, if the Bills want to let Tyrod Taylor walk, bring him on board. Because I think he'd do wonderful in Reid's offense. Outside of that, I don't think there's anywhere in the league, you know, the whole Tony Romo thing, man, if I trusted that guy's health, I'd say go for it.
Oh, yeah.
He's a good quarterback. But, man, how do you trust it?
Okay, let me run something by you. Let me run something by you really quick outside of those two options. And this is going to – I talked about this a little bit earlier on today. This is not going to be popular with a lot of people. But Keen Fahey, who writes for PreSnapReads.com, he's on Dan Lebatard's show all the time. And he's a really interesting analyst of football. I trust his eyes more than I trust my own. It's the same reason I'm having you on right now. I trust your eyes more than I trust my own. And Kean was...
I'm familiar with his work. He wrote the quarterback catalog, right?
Yes. And yep. Kean was talking about the underrated season of Colin Kaepernick and how he was surrounded by such a empty tar pit of talent. On both sides of the ball, that everything that he did looked horrendous, even though he himself was having a pretty good season, and we've seen him be a good quarterback. You mentioned Tyrod Taylor. That just kind of re-jumped the Kaepernick thought in my mind of that might be a guy who, at an even better value, could give you similar types of production, and I think would be fascinating to see in Andy Reid's system. Am I completely nuts?
You know, with Kaepernick... Well, I'll give a twofold response there. I haven't watched Kaepernick's tape.
Mm-hmm.
With regards to the analyst you're quoting, I will say one thing. He tends to stick with views that he's previously held, and he's always kind of liked Kaepernick.
Fair enough.
So that would be the one thing that would make me hesitate there. That said, he does good work. He puts in the time. So with regards to Kaepernick, my concern with him, I mean, there's obviously the whole, you know, Kansas City's in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
People are not going to be fond of that move, by and large, considering the stances he's chosen to take.
Right.
Some of the things he said I've agreed with, some of which I've been like, man, he should have thought that through. Mm-hmm. But that is what it is. I would say on the field, we've seen him play under a really good offensive play caller before in Harbaugh. Same thing that we saw, you know, with Alex Smith. You knew that Alex Smith could perform at a certain level with a certain type of coach.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Kaepernick could perform. My fear is the regression we saw with Kaepernick his second year in Harbaugh system. I don't know about you. I thought Kaepernick was going to take over the league.
Yeah, I thought he was.
But he didn't get any better.
Right.
And his accuracy, I mean, early on, like his deep ball accuracy and stuff, you're like, wow, this is spooky. This guy is going to own the league.
Yeah.
And then he just took a pretty sizable step back. And what concerns me about him is his accuracy. And Tyrod Taylor's accuracy isn't great, so don't get me wrong.
Right.
But I trust his accuracy consistently a little more than I trust Kaepernick. And I think, you know, especially with some of the things Andy Reid is asking them to do with kind of these single read plays and kind of the dink and dunk type stuff, I just don't quite trust Kaepernick to not try to freelance that a little more than I'm comfortable with. It's almost like the opposite problem of what you have with Alex Smith.
Right. And see, at this point, I'm lusting after that. I want the opposite problem.
You want to see a guy that'll freestyle. And that's where I think Taylor might be a good balance in between. because he's just as athletic as Kaepernick. But I think he plays a little more under control to me. And I think he's got a better pocket presence. And pocket presence is my – out of everything I look for with quarterbacks, pocket presence is one of my very top traits, accuracy and pocket presence. If you have those two things, you can play in the league. Even if you got a noodle for an arm, right? That's how Manning survived for so many years.
Right.
And so I like Tyrod seems to feel pressure and respond to it better a bit more than Kaepernick, who he tucks and runs. It's kind of like an Alex Smith issue, right? Mm-hmm. Except he happens to be more athletic.
Right.
And so I think he could be had pretty cheap, and so it might be worth taking a shot at. But, man, I got to tell you, I don't think Andy Reid would do that just based on the whole, like, we can't really do that to Alex again, can we? Like,
oh, it would be.
The same guy.
I mean, there's so many levels of that story that would be just the most fun and most ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, can you imagine Smith just being like, are you freaking kidding me
right,
with this?
Again?
This guy again?
But I had a manifesto last week that I think makes sense. I think there are basically two ways you can win in the NFL and win at a high level. You're either getting elite play from your quarterback or you're getting stupid value. So rookie contract Joe Flacco can win a Super Bowl. Rookie contract Derek Carr gives the Raiders a very high ceiling. Rookie contract Russell Wilson, as good as all of those guys were individually in those seasons or are currently, that value lets you invest elsewhere in the team. I don't get the feeling that Tyrod Taylor would be as great of a value as Kaepernick could possibly be. I also think that's the best argument that there is for drafting a guy in the first or second round. But even if they do that, they've still got to carry at least, I think, $7.5 million of Smith's dead cap money this year if they were to cut him, which is a huge step away from where I think we actually are right now.
Right. And that's I think you're absolutely right. You need value there. Either that or you need, like, if you can maybe get a one-off with, like, an all-time great defense.
Right.
But you need that value there. And I think that's what a lot of people's problem is with Smith. It's, you know, the idea that he's paid like a top-end quarterback isn't exactly true at this point, but he's still getting paid quite a bit of money.
Yeah.
And that's where you kind of ask yourself, man, is this really worth it? And that's where, like you said, I think Taylor isn't going to be cheap. And so if you're ending up paying a guy the same amount that you're paying Alex, and, you know, Taylor isn't, I don't know if he's necessarily a better quarterback than Alex, he's just different.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you ask yourself, well, okay, what if Kaepernick's on that same level, just different, but on that same level, but instead of paying him, you know, $18 million a year, we're paying him $7 million.
Right.
And I could see that. See, look at this. You've already almost swayed me into calling Kaepernick.
There we go. I'm guessing there's not a whole lot of other people that I've done that to so far today, but I'm trying. That's my – I think that accidentally became my goal today.
Yeah, you know, you give it a shot. And again, I haven't reviewed Kaepernick's tape. It could well be if I watched a couple games, I'd be like, wow, that's a great idea. Or I could be like, Josh, you're crazy. You're
sure,
terrible.
Sure, absolutely. So. Both of those, totally possible.
Right.
All right. I'll get you out of here on this. I've got a half a dozen more things to talk to you about, but I'm just going to have you on some other time because this has gone very quickly, even though the time has actually flown by. But let's talk about Jeremy Maclin really quick. You just wrote an article for Arrowhead Pride that calls everyone who wants to cut Jeremy Maclin an idiot. I didn't know that this was becoming a thing. I didn't know people wanted to cut Jeremy Maclin until I saw the Arrowhead Pride Twitter account send out a tweet that said, headline, you know, if you want to cut Jeremy Maclin, you should stop watching sports forever, which I thought was a little strong by you, but I respected it.
I like how you keep popping it more and more, so I'm going to get just hateful tweets about
it. No,
this.
It's great. So I was reading this article titled, "If You Think the Chiefs Should Cut Jeremy Maclin, You Should Probably Die." And
Go step in traffic. And, although I think I did use the Futurama meme. I think I said, you know, it's a bad idea and you should feel bad.
Right,
like that.
That's totally reasonable. You should at least feel
bad. So what happens, a lot of what I write about, I kind of base off what I see on Twitter or what I see in the comments section at Arrowhead Pride, because it's pretty well traveled there. You get to see a good cross-section of fans. And I finally had one too many people say to me, and the guy who said it was really nice about it, he wasn't like some people have been, was very like, well, what do you think of this? You know, the Chiefs could save if they designated him a post-June 1st cut, they could maybe save $10 million, something like that. And finally, he wasn't the first person or the second person or even the dozenth person to say that. And other people that have said have been like, oh, you know, he's past his peak. He can't run anymore. He's a possession guy. He sucks now, blah, 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 blah. And what I just couldn't take it. Now, it's not because I have some kind of special investment in Macklin's success. I think he's a good player. Seems like a nice guy. But my problem is the basis on which people make those statements. And that basis is he only had 500 yards this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, hey, you know what? You're right. That is subpar production
right.
for a number one wide receiver. The problem is it leaves out all context. And the problem with gauging a wide receiver just by stats alone is you're not really judging what the receiver's done. You're judging what the quarterback's done, what the coach has done, what the offensive lineman's done, but you're ignoring all that and saying, oh, it's just on the receiver. And so what I just went back, because a lot of people, he didn't show up when they needed him the most in the playoff game. Because, you know, playmakers make plays, end of story, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so all I did, I spent not even 10 minutes watching the All-22 and found, I mean, I made like 4 GIFs, I think I put on Twitter and I put in the article,
yeah,
of showing times when Macklin was open and didn't get the ball. Now, it wasn't necessarily a condemnation of Alex Smith. Some of the plays, the ball went to another place where someone was open, right? But my point was, if you're going to say a guy is washed, that he can't play anymore, that should be based on what he does on the field. And from a wide receiver standpoint, that should mean, okay, he's not getting separation anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And all it takes is 10 minutes of watching Macklin's film to say, yeah, this guy's still getting open. He's still creating separation. He's still very good at false steps and turning corners around. And he's still got more than enough speed to get separation deep. He looked exactly the same as he's looked since he came to Kansas City. Now, Macklin struggled. He had, you know, a nagging groin injury all year, which, ow. I mean, that sounds terrible.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, you know, he had some personal tragedy. He lost a close friend. And he admitted later in the year that got to him. And I think for a lot of people it would. He probably knew it was getting to him, was pressing a little bit, and you saw some drops issues with him that we hadn't seen previously. That just is what it is. He had a down year. But it really does demonstrate how much a what have you done for me lately crowd NFL fans can be at times, myself included. Because it's just like they assume that a 29-year-old Jeremy Macklin has suddenly forgotten how to play football after years of being good. And so I just felt the need to, just enough people were saying it, and like, oh, the Chiefs need to get some real receivers. The Chiefs receivers are fine. They are fine. Jeremy Macklin, Tyreek Hill, and Chris Conley is a good trio of wide receivers.
Yeah.
And, Conley took a big step forward from year one to year two. If it weren't for Tyreek Hill exploding onto the scene, there would have been a lot of talk about, man, Conley did a great job, you know, stepping forward. I mean, if he takes another step forward, I mean, he's got the physical talent. I mean, Tyreek Hill is what he is. And Macklin can play. That's a very, very good trio of receivers. They're fine there. Go after some depth. They don't need to grab more wide receivers. They need to not give Albert Wilson and Demetrius Harris something like it was like 82 or 85 combined targets.
Amen. Thank you.
That's nothing against those two.
It kind of is.
Well, yeah, not as people.
Right. Fine. Sure. Sure.
Well,
yes.
You know, just as that. I like Demetrius Harris's run block. I think Albert Wilson can do some things after the catch, and he's a good blocker. I think they both have things that they're useful for, and I think they both belong on an NFL roster, for sure. However, they don't belong getting more targets than your best wide receiver. They just don't. That's not where it should be at. Those targets should be cut in half and get another. There's no reason Jeremy Macklin should only have 76 targets in a year, even when he was hurt for part of it. And so my main point was to just try to tell people, look, Macklin can still play. If you just turn on the tape and watch him, he's fine. So let's think about, okay, if he can still play, what's the problem? And let's think about what to do, you know, and people are like, well, then it's obviously Alex Smith. It's not quite that simple, because Macklin's been productive with Smith before. And Smith is part of the problem, I think. But I think the biggest part of the problem for me And, again, I like Andy Reid a lot as a coach. I hope they extend his contract. He runs a really good offense. But he falls in love with that offense sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And he falls in love with the idea of zigging when the defensive coordinator thinks he's going to zag.
Right.
And you can't – you can only run so many of those plays a year before you are choking off your best playmakers. And so that's what I'd hope to see a few more games. I remember early against, I think it was Tennessee, they were targeting Macklin quite a bit. And he looked like he was on his way to 150, 200-yard game. And then it just stopped. And it drove me nuts. Because we'll face a lot of teams where they don't have anyone who can cover Macklin one-on-one. And they don't go for it. Instead, you know, you'll have a couple good plays in a row, and then you'll run, a wide receiver screen to Albert Wilson. And I just asked myself, is that really the way that should be? So anyway, my big thing is there is a bit of a movement to cut Jeremy Macklin because this is the time of year where fans love cap space
right. And
draft picks
yes. More
than they like proven players. And so I just was trying to push back against that a little bit. Hopefully I didn't offend anyone. But it really is a bad idea, and people should feel bad for having it. So
that's a good, strong, soft stance there.
Yeah, there we go. I just need to take a strong stance on something. I've been accused of being on the fence about Alex Smith for so many years. I got to take a firm stance on something.
No, and I think you finally had a good target there to take it. Seth, thank you so much for joining the show. I'd love to have you on sometime again, at least before the draft, because I've got draft questions, and it's still February, so we've got time. That is Seth Kaiser. Am I ever going to get your name right? I'm so sorry.
That's fine. Call me whatever you want. It doesn't really matter.
I'll call you at RealMNChiefsFan on Twitter, which is where you can get a hold of Seth. Seth, thank you so much for joining the show, and I hope to talk to you again very, very soon. We'll be right back on Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Everybody hates my Colin Kaepernick point. None, everybody. Seth, I brought Seth over a little bit in the interview. He started to think, hey, there's a chance that's a decent idea. Just for clarification on Colin Kaepernick, really quick. And then whenever we come back from the next break, we're going to do some science and read some crazy headlines. And maybe talk about the NBA All-Star Game. It's going to be great. But I'm not demanding the Chiefs go get Colin Kaepernick. And then if they don't, the season falls apart. I gave you the logistics of why I think it's a totally reasonable option. And the idea that on a team with Tyreek Hill, that Colin Kaepernick would be the unforgivable one, the one that you could not stand on the roster. You can disagree with his stance and his method. Disagree with what you will as far as Colin Kaepernick. But if you're going to have him on a team with Tyreek Hill and you're going to say the guy that I cannot forgive is Colin Kaepernick or cannot understand is Colin Kaepernick, I think you need to reevaluate how you deal with people who you have a hard time rooting for. That does not mean you have to stand or kneel beside Colin Kaepernick. It means you have to do some introspection and realize, oh yeah, winning is the thing that matters most. Tyreek Hill looks like a superstar. Forgiving him is easy. That's all. I think it's not that insane. Let's take a quick call here from John. John, welcome to Sports Sunday.
All right, Josh, I'm coming to your defense.
Holy,
Colin Kaepernick.
Are you sure?
I'm sorry.
You're sure you're coming to my defense? I didn't expect this call.
I think I am. I'm actually going to support this. I'll say my very first thing on this, Josh, on the condition that Andy Reid can work for him. He would have to be the person that would pull the trigger on this. And, you know, with a few caveats thrown in,
sure. You
know, basically Clark Hunt looking at him in the eye and say, look, if you want to do your protest, that's fine. You can do it in the tunnel, but you are not going to sit there and do this out there on the field. I will allow your protest, but I will not allow it to be visible and stuff like that. So those are my two caveats. But here's my reasons for supporting it. Alex Smith has already been benched for this guy by a guy that I think is a top-of-the-line head coach, He is a Super Bowl starter that has already had a season that surpasses what Alex Smith. The fact that you could get this guy probably for half the cost, if not less, makes him a reason. I don't think that the Chiefs would do any better with Alex Smith, considering the fact that we're going to play a first place schedule come next year. I think we're staring right at the gun of an 8-8 season at best. I do think that that Denver is going to sign Tony Romo, and they're going to go right back to being a very, very good thing. I think this is a time for a gamble. I think Colin Kaepernick is a gamble, but by God, I think he's a worthy one. He's a Super Bowl starter. He's already had a better season than Alex Smith, and a top-of-the-line coach already benched Alex Smith to do Colin Kaepernick. If we can do the first two requirements, Josh, I think it's a worthwhile gamble. Tell me what you think, and I'll drop off the line.
John, thank you for your call. I agree with you in most of those pieces. If you're going to say, if you're going to try to, like, limit the extent of what Kaepernick can do in the way by way of protest, I think that Kaepernick would have a problem with that. I think I would have a problem with that because you're controlling the amount of expression you're giving to your team. But that's a conversation for Andy Reid and Colin Kaepernick to have. I wouldn't demand that personally. If Andy Reid would, then Andy Reid would. So I would not, I would, certainly wouldn't institute that caveat for my stance on Kaepernick being a Chief. But across the board with the rest of it, I think that all works. Now, Kaepernick and Alex Smith are different players now than they were whenever Smith got benched for Kaepernick in San Francisco. But I think what you can argue from that is that Harbaugh saw the limitations of Alex Smith and saw the ceiling of Colin Kaepernick. The higher ceiling of Colin Kaepernick. I think the limitations of Alex Smith are still right there. I think the ceiling of Colin Kaepernick, while potentially seeming harder to reach right now than it was last time, is also still very visible. Thanks for your call, John. I appreciate having an ally on my non-insanity. I feel slightly more grounded.
That's going to do it for this episode of the Rough and the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio and ArrowheadAddict.com. If you want more of this show that you heard today outside of the Chiefs pieces, you can tune in to Sports Radio 810 WHB on Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. This week I was on from 9 to noon. That can vary a little bit, but unless something terrible happens, I'll be on at 9. You can follow me on Twitter at JB Briscoe. I hope the Colin Kaepernick thing made sense to everybody. It's not just poking for reaction, as I've already been accused of. But I think there's an actual place in this conversation about what's next for the Chiefs at the quarterback position where Colin Kaepernick might just fit. Also, thanks again to Seth Kaiser for coming on and teaching us all a little bit about Dontari Poe, Eric Berry, and everything else having to do with the Chiefs. Hopefully you hear me again next week about this same time. I'm Joshua Briscoe. Bye, Mom!
Excuse me, sir, but could you drop the bass?